Live from CAP Radio in Sacramento, this is Inside. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. A push spanning 19 months to remove Governor Gavin Newsom from office failed to cross the finish line. Newsom will now finish his first term as governor. With nearly 70% of ballots counted, nearly 2 out of 3 California voters voted to keep Newsom in office. There remains millions of ballots left to count, including those cast on Election Day. But the Associated Press called the race last night, explaining Newsom's lead, although it may shrink, statistically will not be overcome. Although leading recall supporters by a nearly 30-point margin is sizable, Newsom's success was far but guaranteed. I mean, we don't really have to go too far back to be reminded of polls showing the governor in a tight race. So, what changed and what's ahead? CAP Radio politics reporter Nicole Nixon is rounding out the days of reporting, took a short nap, and now joins us with more on last night's speeches from Governor Newsom and his leading challengers. Good morning, Nicole.
Good morning.
Okay, so before we get to highlights from last night, were you surprised how early the race was called, just given how closely you've been covering this?
You know, I was a little surprised, and I think that just stems from last year and the days and days of waiting for the presidential race to be called. But we saw, you know, a lot of early mail-in votes turned in, and those were able to be processed quickly and released soon after 8 o'clock. So, you know, looking back, I guess it shouldn't have been that much of a surprise.
You know, it's, I think, important to remember, easy to kind of forget given the pandemic, that this recall effort started in February of 2020 before the pandemic. So just kind of iron out this effort. How did we get here?
I mean, yeah, the 60-second version of this is, yes, this recall started before the pandemic. It qualified because of the pandemic, because a judge extended the window for signature gathering. And it very quickly became about the pandemic because of that fateful French laundry dinner and all of Newsom's coronavirus restrictions that his critics hated so much. And there were other issues at play here, you know, housing, homelessness, crime, immigration. But as the Delta variant surged, there was a moment over the summer where Newsom's team seemed worried. You know, the polls played into that. But the governor was able to spin the coronavirus argument in his favor because majorities of Californians support restrictions, like requiring proof of vaccination, you know, to get into venues. And he was able to turn this into a kind of life or death matter. He ran an ad on that because many of his Republican opponents said that they would undo his mask guidelines or requirements that certain workers get vaccinated or tested so regularly.
Yeah, although recall petitions are actually like common for governors. I mean, actually getting enough signatures, however, for a special election is rare. I mean, Newsom is just the second governor in California history to qualify for the ballot. I mean, we've talked at length about former Governor Gray Davis. But when did these signatures begin picking up momentum? Was it that French laundry incident?
It was, because that happened just about the exact same time that the judge gave recall organizers 4 more months to gather signatures. And then here was the governor being hypocritical about his own coronavirus guidelines, telling people not to mix households and going to a dinner with a dozen people, and no less at a very fancy restaurant. So those two things definitely gave a lot of momentum to the recall folks.
So given all of that context, you were there last night, mm-hmm. You heard the governor speak. What stood out to you?
I mean, the governor, very short. It was 5 minutes in and out. But, you know, he said he was humbled and thankful for the margin of victory. And he talked at length about, you know, not just what Californians said by rejecting the recall, but all the things they said yes to by voting for him. So let's listen.
I want to focus on what we said yes to as a state. We said yes to science. We said yes to vaccines. We said yes to ending this pandemic. We said yes to people's right to vote without fear of fake fraud or voter suppression. We said yes to women's fundamental constitutional right to decide for herself what she does with her body and her fate and future. We said yes to diversity. We said yes to inclusion. We said yes to pluralism. We said yes to all those things that we hold dear as Californians, and I would argue as Americans.
Vicky, we've talked a lot about the pandemic. This is a speech that I think could have been given last year, or maybe even in 2018 if we weren't talking about coronavirus. But one thing Democrats have really tried to do the last couple weeks is make this a national election based on national issues and really a referendum on Trumpism. I think that really helped Newsom rile up support for him in the last final weeks here.
I'm humbled and grateful to the millions and millions of Californians that exercised their fundamental right to vote.
So there's that humility. And you really brought up an important point that I was going to address, is that it seemed like the strategy was campaigning against Trumpism and a Republican-led recall as opposed to his policies and leadership.
Yeah, and, you know, he did talk about his own coronavirus restrictions, which have been pretty popular among his Democratic base. But especially with the emergence of Larry Elder as the top Republican candidate, the top person to replace Newsom, he was able to really make this Newsom versus Elder type of race, especially because Elder is such a strong supporter of President Trump, agrees with him on so many things. It almost became a Newsom versus Trump, which is, you know, we've seen for the past couple years. They spent 2 years going after each other on Twitter a lot. So nothing super new here.
Well, given that Larry Elder, he garnered the vast majority of votes for those who actually voted on question two. What did he have to say last night?
Well, one thing that was surprising is that Elder did not commit before Tuesday to accepting the results of the election, but he did that last night. He conceded the race. And I guess we can just hear a little bit of that.
I can't think of anything that this man has done in the last 2 years that suggests he deserves another day in office. However, we recognize that we lost the battle, but we are certainly going to win the war. We are forcing them now to pay attention to the problem of homelessness. We are forcing them now to do a better job on schools. We are forcing them now to do a better job on clearing our forests. We're forcing them now to do a better job about energy. We are forcing them now to pay attention to the things they should have paid attention to 2 years ago.
And this is something that we expected when polls were coming out last week showing that this would likely go in Newsom's favor. Pro-recall groups were saying that, you know, even if they don't win, they have made a point and they've shown that they are a force to be reckoned with and that they won't go away after this recall.
And I think it's important to mention that when it comes to that second question, I mean, there were a sizable number of voters who chose not to choose a replacement candidate for governor.
Absolutely. I think that's one of the things that surprised me the most, is that the governor took a big gamble by urging his supporters not to even answer that second question. And I know, just talking to Democratic voters, a lot of them were really uncomfortable with that. This is a ballot with two questions and they're being asked to leave half of it blank. But looking at the numbers we have now, it's more than 4 million voters that didn't fill out that second question. That's more than Larry Elder has gotten so far, more votes. So that really paid off for Newsom.
You know, 6 months from now, we're in the midterm primaries. Did the governor or Elder or any other candidates, are they already swiveling to 2022?
The governor did not talk about 2022 last night, but everybody on his team says that he's in a really strong position going into next year when he's up for reelection. Larry Elder told his supporters to stay tuned. It sounds like he's planning to run for, if not governor again, maybe some other office.
I'm curious, given the governor defeated this recall by a significant margin, I mean, we don't have to go too far back in polling, I believe, like July or even August, when the race was believed to be tighter and the governor was believed to potentially be in jeopardy. So was the polling off, or did the campaigning strategy really influence the trajectory of the outcome?
Yeah, I think it was a combination of things. There was this one poll by SurveyUSA that showed the recall winning by 11 points, I think. And they came out with a memo, I guess, that there was a question that maybe wasn't worded well. So that poll should have been tossed from the beginning. And that, you know, because of the big that poll showing it would win by such a big margin, that like kind of threw off the 538, you know, polling average. But a few things, you know, I talked to Democratic strategists who say that Democrats are always engaging late on elections, and that's normal. So they weren't super surprised by polls showing that Democrats weren't paying attention in the middle of the summer, especially on an off year and a special election. And then I think that, yeah, there were things that Newsom was able to, you know, rile up his base by pointing to Larry Elder and saying, look at the ridiculous things this guy is saying. Do you really want somebody like this as your governor? And those kinds of things helped him, you know, turn out his voters as well.
Finally, I mean, it's also just really sobering to remember that this recall cost taxpayers hundreds of millions of dollars. And the conversation leading up to recall election day has been shifting to overhauling the recall rules in California. Do you foresee this picking up steam now that the recall is done with?
Yes. In fact, the two lawmakers that head the legislature's election committee say that they'll be out with a statement today about the recall process. I fully expect that they'll have legislation ready to go for next year when they get back into session. How this would work is the recall is outlined in the state constitution. So lawmakers would have to put this on the ballot, and voters would have final say over any major changes to the recall. And, you know, we're talking about maybe raising that threshold, the signature threshold, to make it harder, require more signatures. Maybe things like requiring illegal or unethical activity by an official to face a recall instead of just, you know, voters disliking them. And this whole issue about the plurality that Newsom could have lost with 50% plus one and then been replaced by somebody who only got, you know, Larry Elder has 46% right now. But with the 4 million people that didn't vote, it's closer to only 20% if you factor that in.
Right. Yeah. So just a quarter. Nicole, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
And that is Cap Radio politics reporter Nicole Nixon. You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. And if you're just joining us, we're talking about Governor Newsom remaining in office after defeating the recall election. Let's now bring in Luis Alvarado. He is a former press secretary for the California Republican Party and longtime Republican strategist. Luis, welcome to Insight.
Thanks. I was deputy press secretary, but that was
deputy.
A while back.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you so much for joining us, and I appreciate the correction. What surprised you about last night?
Actually, not much. Maybe a little bit how the numbers were really skewed a little bit off for many people. It was a great victory for the governor, and certainly it was a great defeat for Republicans as well.
Were there any lessons learned from this recall?
For us Republicans, absolutely, that basically Trumpism is dead. It's dead, at least in the West Coast, with regards to anybody who wants to connect with the electorate. And you can't just point at things that don't work. You actually have to demonstrate how you're actually going to make it work for them. And you have to have some kind of experience. Larry Elder, you know, is never been elected to office. And when you want to run the 50th economy of the world, you better have some credentials behind you if you want to get the trust of the people.
You know, Newsom went hard calling this a Republican-led recall. But, you know, given the pandemic and the nuances of the impact of the pandemic, would you agree with that, or is that too limited of a label?
No, I mean, that was a strategy. I mean, one thing we need to recognize is that a few weeks ago, you know, the governor was actually in trouble. And all those troubles that he had then are still there. The only thing that changed was that Democrats nationwide broke the glass, put the boots in the ground and opened their checkbooks and actually won the campaign. This is a blue state, and it would have been incredibly embarrassing for Democrats at a national level if Governor Newsom would have been taken out of office by a radio personality person. And at the end of the day, I think for us Republicans, you know, there's going to be a convention in San Diego in a few days. You know, there's a question, and we can't repeat doing what doesn't give us any opportunity for success. You know, there's this the one thing that comes to mind about, you know, repeating things and expecting a different result. And at one point, Republicans, if they want to be taken serious at a state level, we're going to have to figure out how to connect with the voters. And those issues that Governor Gavin Newsom said that California said yes to, you know, they also said yes to and not by choice, but they also said yes to all those issues regarding homelessness, all those things that Larry Elder pointed out. Are still deficiencies in our government here in California, where it's actually managed by Democrats in every single constitutional office.
You know, it's important to remember, I mean, California produced Richard Nixon, Ronald Reagan, who was also elected to governor twice. It's been 18 years since Governor Schwarzenegger, but the electorate has been changing. Democrats outnumber Republicans 2-1. No party preference voters are rivaling Republican voters. How does this shape the identity of the California Republican Party?
You know, the question is, and being blunt here, is like, well, when are we going to hit bottom? Because at one point, you know, you can still be conservative. I can't tell you how many times I'm approached by Democrats who tell me that they're conservative and they're still Democrats. But I mean, they're conservatives, but they have to register Democrats so they can still serve in office. And we saw that over 1.5 million people signed the petition for the recall because they feel that the Democratic Party has skewed too much to the left. It's too progressive. It doesn't represent the interest of all Californians, and that includes Democrats and no party preference. So the question is, with the Republicans, I think we already know where we're at. We can't go further down. The question is for Democrats, how do they govern? And at what point do you actually allow people in California to elect representatives that are going to represent the interest of those Californians and not the interest of the special interest here in California?
You mentioned that there's a convention coming up in San Diego, and I'm just curious because the California GOP chose not to endorse a recall candidate. Do you think that there's going to be a discussion surrounding a divide or even an identity crisis within the party?
That's the only thing that can do. It's have those questions. If they're not having those questions, if they're not having those conversations, then truly they are not going to do anything that's going to help the party recognize that this path is not the path of success. The whole purpose of having a political party is to get the members elected to public office. And if we can't do that effectively as a party, then we're going to have to figure out how to change. And I want, and for us, Republicans who are not aligned with Trumpism, you know, and feel that we've been marginalized, It's that would be the first step that they have to recognize, that the party has to unite itself, has to unite conservatives. And then after unite conservatives, how to create a message that actually resonates with a California electorate.
I mean, you said earlier on that Trumpism is effectively dead in the West, and this recall election, the voter turnout shows that. But the fact that Larry Elder had by far the majority of votes for those who wanted to replace Governor Newsom in California, what does that tell you?
Well, it could have been the majority of those who voted on the question, yes. But like you mentioned earlier, there were too many people who also didn't vote at all, who probably would have voted for a sensible, moderate, experienced conservative to lead the state a little bit further to the middle. And maybe we're talking about another Democrat or a no party preference or a moderate Republican who can actually build that kind of campaign. I think the state is suffering because it's just gone too progressive. You know, I remember being on this show talking about the State of the Union address, where Governor Gavin Newsom said that his whole governorship was going to focus on the homeless. And all we've seen is those homeless numbers continue to grow, regardless of the pandemic, regardless of what the budget issues have been. You know, there has not been any demonstration that the government of California is doing anything from the legislative perspective to enhance the pathways to ensure that those problems are being solved. The problems are still going to be here today and tomorrow, and they're going to still be here when he runs for re-election next year.
Finally, I'm just curious, do you think the governor has a strong chance to be re-elected next year?
I think the governor, as it stands right now, has a chance to be president of the United States in 2024. If the cards continue to go the way they're going right now, but I think first it's up to Californians to give him an opportunity to lead. I am hoping, as a Californian, not as a partisan, that the governor is successful in making and facing these challenges that we are experiencing. At the end of the day, being partisan means that you are offering another perspective on how to get to the same place, and that's having success for us Californians and Americans. And I hope that Republicans and Democrats someday get to work together again in finding solutions for those problems. Until that day happens, we're going to still concede the microphones to those in the extreme right and the extreme left.
Luis, thanks for spending time with us. I really appreciate your perspective.
My pleasure.
And that is Luis Alvarado. He is a Republican strategist. Up next, with the majority of votes counted and more coming in by the hour, we'll explore the message voters have for elected officials and what the results say about California's changing electorate. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, Cap Radio. I'm Vicki Gonzalez.
Hi there. If you're enjoying Insight, we think you'll love our podcast, Blue Dot, with your host, that's me, Dave Shlohm. Every week, we take a deep dive into science and nature, from the search for life beyond our pale blue dot in the vastness of space to the ecosystems we all depend on. You never know what you'll hear, from the physics of Leonardo da Vinci to communications with humpback whales. Check out Blue Dot wherever you get your podcasts.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. The overall result is clear. Governor Gavin Newsom will remain in office, but sifting through the results reveals a deeper message about California voters, an electorate that has changed widely since the last recall election nearly 20 years ago. Joining us to break down ballot returns and voter participation is Paul Mitchell with Political Data, Inc. Welcome, Paul.
Thanks for having me.
And we're also joined by Mindy Romero, founder of the USC Center for Inclusive Democracy. Welcome, Mindy.
Good morning.
All right, Paul, it's been 24 hours since we last chatted with you. Were you surprised by the recall being called within less than 2 hours?
Yeah, I was actually telling people that I thought within a half hour or 45 minutes, we would have a really good sense as to where this thing was headed. We knew that there were, about 9 million ballots in before the polls closed. And those 9 million ballots reflected an electorate that was 2-1 Democratic over Republican. And so just objectively, we knew that if those first results came in and that Newsom was winning by margin, something like that, or maybe a 20-point margin, that the recall was failing by that margin, that the polling was right. And we could all kind of go to bed, that was going to basically settle it. But if that first data came in and it was a race where the recall was losing by 5 points or something kind of close, then we knew that we could be dealing with this for the next several weeks and it could get really dragged out. So I think I wasn't surprised that we had some definitive notion within the first hour that and it was pretty it was actually a larger gap than I think most people were expecting.
Last I checked, I mean, a sizable amount of votes have been returned, but I believe voter turnout still hovers around in the 40 percentile. I know you track this regularly.
Yeah, it's a touchy thing because sometimes people will look at the data that's produced the first night and they'll get in print like, oh, it's 41% turnout election, but it's not. We actually had 44% turnout just of the ballots that we know were cast, not counting the ballots that were dropped off at the polling locations and have been processed, the ballots that were received in the mail yesterday, ballots that were received in the mail will be received today and tomorrow that are valid because they're postmarked on time. So we're going to probably inch towards 50%, 55% turnout maybe by the end of this. But yeah, right now, looking at the returns that have been posted, it's only 41% of registered voters' ballots have been processed, but that will go up.
And given that it'll go up and it could likely be in the 50 percentile range, how does that compare historically with other special elections?
Well, it's interesting. If you look back at the 2003 recall, I think that one was around 61% turnout, something in that range, but of a much smaller voter universe. Not only were there fewer Californians, but there were fewer registered voters. A smaller share of the electorate was registered because the registration policies just weren't as registration wasn't as readily available then. And we didn't have the policies we have now, like with the DMV registration process and everything. So we did have an election in 2005, a special election, which I think the turnout was really, really tiny, like 28% or something really low. I think that observers at the outset were thinking that this could have been an election with 35 to 40% total turnout. And the concern was that if there was this huge differential in enthusiasm between those pro-recall forces and the people who are against it, that we could have a really strange outcome in a state that is, you know, safely blue Democratic. We could have had the governor recalled. That's what some of the early polling actually showed, was what happens if we have really anemic turnout and really disproportionate Republican participation, that it could get close. But in the end, the campaign did, you know, a lot of work to basically polarize this election along partisan and national policy lines. They were able to get this election into a lane that they knew they could win in. And I don't think that this recall, you know, was ever going to be close after the first, after, you know, a couple weeks in, once we started seeing those messages define the election.
Mindy, from what you're gathering, I mean, you're the founder of the USC Center for Inclusive Democracy. Does this voter turnout reflect California's diversity?
Well, I can tell you that without, of course, seeing the final numbers, even without seeing the final numbers, we know it will not reflect California's diversity. In any given election, those that are voting, that pie of voters, is not as, doesn't have the same demographic makeup. It's whiter, wealthier, older. And when turnout is lower, the gaps between groups grow, typically are wider, and the electorate is even less representative. So if we are at 50 or 51, 52, 53% of registered voter turnout, that's exciting because it's a lot higher than many of us had expected initially. It means that probably the electorate is going to be more representative. The gaps are going to be a little bit less than if we were at 35 or 40%. I think Paul's fantastic ballot tracker is showing that, at least as of yesterday, 19%, for instance, of ballots that were being tracked returned were Latino. But those numbers are much lower than the Latino share of registered voters, which is a 27% Latino share of eligible voters. And you can look at a number of different groups and see that same thing.
When it comes to educating voters and really removing barriers, and given that we have midterms just around the corner, as you know, we've really just been hitting home time and time again, what was successful this time and what are the lessons learned that could be applied next year?
Yeah, I think as Paul touched on as well, you know, and those before us this morning, I mean, Newsom was able to really expand that likely voter pool, right? So the earlier polls in July and August were just that, they were early. Voters weren't paying attention. There was an enthusiasm gap, particularly Democrats were not as enthusiastic, and they felt it was a slam dunk if they were thinking about it and didn't think their vote was needed. And it's important to note that when there's this like education need and kind of need to motivate and mobilize the electorate, voters of color, young voters, voters that are historically underrepresented, are going to be even harder to reach them, and they're less likely to be contacted by campaigns and candidates. And in this type of election, instead of having, you know, potentially dozens of candidates reaching out to voters and, you know, multiple ballot initiatives, you know, lots of things kind of generating attention and connection with voters, it was all up to the recall campaign, Newsom and the replacement candidates. So I think that played a big part. There was just less, you know, for all the work that was out there that we saw and all the money that was spent on this one race, there still was less, information, less contact, less mobilization of groups. And, you know, going into the midterms, we expect higher turnout, but we'll have to, you know, I don't know how much of a boost we got in terms of just educating people about the electoral process from this or just even connecting people and motivating people about the electoral process from this race because it was so unusual. And the last thing I'll say too, I am excited though and really optimistic about the fact that we are seeing higher turnout, still should be higher from a democracy standpoint considering the consequences of this election. But we are now looking at a number of elections in a row where we've had much higher than expected turnout, 2016, 2018, 2020, and now this special election, which confounds common expectations. So what I like to think of is the glass half full. So we're going into 2022 with a stronger culture of voting, which we haven't had, more of an understanding that outreach needs to be done with all groups to increase, and particularly historically underrepresented groups to increase the representation of our electorate. And I think we have a lot to build off of just from a democracy standpoint and hopefully building a stronger culture of voting in California, especially given our history. We've often been one of the lowest turnout states in the nation.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. And if you're just joining us, we're diving into voter turnout with Paul Mitchell with Political Data Inc. and Mindy Romero with USC Center for Inclusive Democracy. Paul, I mean, it's easy to forget there are counties where the majority actually voted to recall the governor. What counties stick out to you? I mean, there are some just really neighboring us here in Sacramento.
Well, we did see, and of course, these data are preliminary. We're right. Still going to be expecting to see some of these counties potentially flip. We saw some surprises like Orange County early on in the night. Everybody was tweeting about how Orange County was, Democratic. It had turned blue. When we look at the state, there are going to be parts of the state with maybe the more rural areas, more Central Valley, Northern California, kind of the state of Jefferson area. Those are the kind of areas that right now have shown that they're voting yes on the recall. Sacramento was definitely a no. And there might be some other counties that, could flip in the next, few days as ballots come in. Merced was one of the counties in the Central Valley that was strongly no by, almost 20 points. But there are others that, in that Central Valley area that might be a little bit more kind of in between. When we look at some of these data, though, it is really, surprising the gap, statewide the gap. And in some of these counties, like in Orange County right now, as I was saying, that right now it is at 64% no in Orange County. That is the same as in San Diego. San Diego is around 64% no. The numbers are pretty astounding. Actually, I'm sorry, in San Diego, it's 58% no. In Orange County, it's 52% no. So a little bit off there. But those numbers are pretty astounding. I don't think most people were expecting to see this kind of big number from the no side. One of the questions that I've had and people might be asking is, people did vote at the polls, and we know the polling showed that 70% of people who said they were going to vote at the polls were pro recall. And that data should be in the data that we have. That's not data that we're going to be waiting to get in the coming days. And when we looked at the first several days of early voting started 11 days out and then kind of accelerated 4 days out. When we looked at that early voting, it was a lot smaller share of the electorate than we saw in 2020. So that's not just to say that it was lower turnout than 2020. It meant that relative to the number of mail-in ballots. So we would have 200,000 mail-in ballots coming and then 20,000 in-person votes. Whereas in 2020, there were almost 200,000 in-person votes before Election Day. There were 30 in Orange County. There were only 36,000 in-person votes before Election Day in Orange County. So those kind of metrics, that data suggests that we didn't have this big groundswell of, pro-recall votes, votes at the end. And I'm sure we've talked about it, but this issue of the no side grabbing onto vote fraud claims, I think was really damaging to their own cause. They had this kind of insane, messaging of spending a month telling people not to vote by mail, that you can't trust vote by mail, to vote at the polls. And then the days before the election saying, well, it's over and it's rigged and, you can't trust the election. That is like political malpractice. And if you were to say, do that messaging to minority voters, that would probably be a Voting Rights Act lawsuit, right? That's the kind of thing that you would do to your enemy, not something you would do to yourself. So I think that's going to take a lot of introspection from those folks as to whether or not that's a message that they want to kind of continue on in these future elections, especially going into this really important midterm election in 22.
Well, then did it surprise you that Larry Elder was so quick to concede, given that leading up, he didn't necessarily indicate that he would accept the results?
I mean, no, I wasn't surprised that he conceded quickly. I think that was pretty obvious. It wasn't like it was a close election where they could claim that it was really voter fraud. But there is this weird thing where they feel a lot of those folks feel as though that's where their base is, and they need to communicate to that. They need to energize them. They need to be saying the things that those folks want to hear. And it just seems like it's really, really harmful to their own cause. And I think that Mindy would agree it erodes confidence in our election system, because it's not just that, you know, their own voters are hearing this, other voters are hearing it, young people are hearing it. We could be creating, unfortunately, a culture of kind of a lack of respect for the election system that would really kind of decay one of our most important democratic institutions.
Mindy, ending with you, what are you interested in as we head towards the midterm elections?
Well, you know, actually, one of the things is what Paul just mentioned, certainly. I mean, I stated earlier this hope glass half full, you know, excitement about creating a culture of voting and one that removes barriers, right, to participation for so many people, real barriers to participation. But at the same time, we have a lot of distrust in our electoral process. I mean, historically, we have, and for good reason, for many, many groups. But we have a whole nother level, and so much of it based on misinformation and, you know, lies, flat out lies about the electoral process and fraud and so forth. So I think tracking that narrative going forward, I know Luis was mentioning earlier the changes that he, I think, hoped and expect to see within the Republican Party. But we have to remember that, and I totally agree with him, of course, on so much of that, but we also have to remember, just as we were talking about the state, the map, what it looks like now, we aren't really a deep blue state. We are shades of blue, right? And many communities of red, many counties of red. And at the local level, statewide, yes, that narrative, Trumpism, all of that is a challenge. But at the local level, at least in the short term, Trumpism calls for voter fraud, rallying around conspiracy theories and misinformation. For some, that does work. And as much as that's still kind of in the ether in our state and in our nation, that is a challenge. And that will play to some degree with congressional races, which are local and that are competitive in our state, that help determine the balance of power, for instance, and control of Congress. So, you know, thinking about all of those things, but also still hopeful. And at the same time, recognizing that for many people, the last few years, their vote has been also informed by some fear as well, and hoping that, you know, fear of seeing a surprise, that sort of thing, and hoping that, you know, we can get ourselves kind of out of that in the long term. But one start is to create this habit, this pattern of voting, and at least we're moving in that right direction. So,
Mindy and Paul, thanks for spending time with us once again.
Great spending time with you.
Thanks for having me.
And that is Paul Mitchell with Political Data, Inc. and Mindy Romero, the founder of USC Center for Inclusive Democracy. Still ahead, California's recall had the eyes of the country. Political junkie Ken Rudin explains how the California recall is a litmus test for midterm election campaigns across the United States. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.
Hi there. If you're enjoying Insight, we think you'll love our podcast, Blue Dot, with your host, that's me, Dave Shlohm. Every week, we take a deep dive into science and nature, from the search for life beyond our pale blue dot in the vastness of space to the ecosystems we all depend on. You never know what you'll hear, from the physics of Leonardo da Vinci to communications with humpback whales. Check out Blue Dot wherever you get your podcasts.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Inside on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. We may just be hours into the aftermath of the recall, but the focus is already shifting to 2022. Midterm primaries are just 6 months away, which means Governor Newsom and those looking to challenge him are seamlessly going from one campaign to another. However, the midterms have big national implications as well. I mean, who will lead Congress, which ultimately shapes the direction of our country? Ken Rudin is a longtime political journalist based just outside Washington, D.C., and is the host of the Political Junkie podcast. Ken, welcome back.
Thank you, Vicky.
I would imagine national Democrats are kind of waking up with a huge weight off their shoulders.
Yeah, they are. And I've been talking to a lot of people today, and they're excited beyond belief that thank goodness we don't have Larry Elder. Thank goodness we don't have Texas and California. Not that when you think about it, when you start to think about reality, it probably never was going to happen. But as you know, you've noticed, noted, and your guests have noted, there were these polls. They were maybe outliers, but there were polls in July and August or June and July that said, well, maybe it's closer than people think. And of course, Democrats got nervous.
Yeah, I mean, this was a statewide recall, but just given the focus and the attention that was given on this recall, and obviously California is very influential. It's the most populous state, the fifth largest economy. I mean, there's a larger message here, right?
Well, there is. And actually, had the Republicans won, had Gavin Newsom been recalled, there would have been a tremendous message there. And basically that the kind of liberal kind of government, you know, you've had three Democrats elected governor in a row in California, which has never happened before. And the Republicans have said, enough is enough. You know, you had that feeling with Gray Davis in 2003. But as we've all pointed out, that was a world difference. The demographics in California were different. The Republican Party was different. Schwarzenegger did not campaign as a part of a national Republican wave. He campaigned on local issues, whereas Larry Elder was very happy to be associated with Trump and Trumpism, or at least not as much as Gavin Newsom portrayed him. But I mean, the Democrats basically had a target. And instead of focusing on the deficiencies of Gavin Newsom, which I think were significant and plentiful, they were able to focus instead on Trump, Trumpism, and Larry Elder, and it worked.
In the days and even the few weeks leading up to the election, I mean, there were some Democrat heavy hitters stepping up for Newsom, from President Biden, Vice President Harris, Senator Sanders and Warren, AOC, you know. But when it came to the Republican Party, it seemed like Republicans were lacking in chiming in during the recall. I mean, California Congressmember Kevin McCarthy is a widely influential force in national politics.
You know, that struck me, too. The fact that Kevin McCarthy, who at least in Washington is the Republican, along with Mitch McConnell, but perhaps even more so, the most widely quoted and widely followed Republican in Washington. And yet in California, in such a visible recall where they pitted the R's against the D's, you didn't even hear from Kevin McCarthy. And the fact that so many Democrats were talking about a fear of Texasism encroaching on California and their restrictions on abortion. It's not a coincidence that you had Amy Klobuchar and Elizabeth Warren and Kamala Harris, other women, national female politicians, coming in and warning California that this was a race too important to ignore. So I think that's kind of perhaps what a Democratic theme could be for 2022, the fact that women can be, you know, your rights of abortion rights could be taken away from you if the Republicans get their way. And that probably would have been the case with Larry Elder, who was against abortion, was against minimum wage, was against the science of climate change. There were so many things he was against that it made it easier for Newsom and the Democrats.
given that he was overwhelmingly the leading contender for those who chose to answer question two, what does Larry Elder tell? What does that say to national Republicans?
Well, first of all, it's interesting that in such a liberal state as California, in such a solidly blue state as California, that you would have a Republican, leading Republican so far to the right. I kind of think that Republicans also paid attention to what happened yesterday in California. And they may say that, well, maybe in, you know, Mississippi and, in a very solidly red states, it makes sense to run a Trump kind of campaign. But in states where it's somewhat blue, you know, like in Ohio, for example, where there's an open Senate seat where the Republican incumbent is retiring, do you want to run a right-wing candidate, a pro-Trump candidate, when there's so much purple in the state, so many swing voters? So I think there are going to be a lot of questions being raised and answered by Republicans over the results from yesterday.
You know, there was kind of a foreshadowing of stay tuned when Larry Elder spoke last night. So I guess hypothetically, even if his future in state politics doesn't happen, is there actually a national opening for him given his rhetoric and candor, albeit, you know, regularly being fact checked?
Well, I mean, you know, look, conservatives love their heroes and they love their heroes to be angry. And Larry Elder ran a very, I don't know if he ran such an angry campaign, but he has a history of inflammatory comments, which the right wing loves. I mean, that's fine. But if the name of the game is winning elections, maybe that's not the way to do it. Now, we did see Donald Trump, who was not supposed to win in 2016, did win because he inspired a lot of Republicans who just hadn't been voting in the past. So it's very possible that they could look at another. You just wonder that in the aftermath of January 6th, in the aftermath of a concerted effort to overthrow democracy, if Democrats could somehow tie January 6th to a recall when they want to upend a democratically elected governor, it could make the Republican Party look like the party that doesn't believe in fair elections. They're still recounting in Arizona. They're still recounting in Pennsylvania of what happened in 2020. And there's maybe some Republicans will say, like Kevin Faulkner is a perfect example. He was always the kind of Republican who said, let's look ahead. Let's not do these sideshows. Let's not be extreme. But look how Faulkner fared in California. He did miserably. So maybe the answer is making loud noises like Larry Elder and the hard right conservatives. But are they going to win elections? And that's a real big question.
I know that the votes are still being counted, but this is all preliminary when looking from county to county. But preliminarily, how people voted, you know, seems to be also a reflection of COVID rates when looking to county turnout within the state of California. Is that just unique to our state, or do you think that there are parallels nationally?
Oh, I think there may absolutely are, should be parallels nationally. I mean, even though you look at Florida, where Governor DeSantis is rated kind of, I mean, he still has plus 50% popularity, but more and more people are dying and more people are blaming DeSantis' disregard of a vaccine mandate for these deaths. So that could very well, I mean, I've always been convinced that had Donald Trump took the COVID pandemic seriously in 2020, he could have been reelected. And I think Republicans may have to realize that, you know, just because Governor Noem in South Dakota and Governor Abbott in Texas and Governor DeSantis in Florida are fighting the vaccine mandate, if more and more people are dying, they're going to turn to Republicans and say, you let us down. By the way, one thing about California, and I'm speaking obviously as a non-Californian, but I was fascinated to look at the map of how they voted on the recall, because I'm old enough to remember, you know, the right-wing conservatives in Orange County and Santa Ana and James Utt. I mean, those names may bring a blank to most people, but this was solidly Republican, conservative, John Birch country. And to see Southern California almost unanimously, or at least as far as counties go, vote against the recall, and then see Northern California, which used to be the elite liberals and stuff, voting for it. Obviously, California is changing too, but I still think it's moving towards the left, certainly from in the aftermath of 2003, what happened then?
Well, we only have about 30 seconds left. And I'm just curious, you know, as we've all come to learn over the past 18 months, a lot can happen and change from 1 week or month to the next. So given your tenure covering politics, is this uncertainty for you just par for the course? Or is this actually kind of unsettling that, you know, there's still a lot of unknowns as we head to 2022?
No, I think the beauty of politics is that there is tons of uncertainty. I mean, you think of, you know, 1984 when Ronald Reagan won 49 states, but 2 years later, the Democrats took back control of Congress. So you know, things could change on a dime. But, you know, let's see what happens even in this November in Virginia. If Terry McAuliffe can do the same kind of tactics as Gavin Newsom did in California, and they win, the Democrats win in Virginia, that could be a theme that continues on to 2022.
Ken, thanks for joining us again this morning.
Thanks, Vicky. I'll see you at the next recall. Yeah.
Ken Reardon is a longtime political journalist based just outside Washington, D.C., and the host of the Political Junkie podcast. That's it for Insight today. You can learn about all of our guests at capradio.org/insight. You can also subscribe to the Insight podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Thank you to producer Cynthia Lopez and managing editor Aram Sarkissian. Our digital team is Chris Hagen, Emily Zentner, Helga Salinas, and Megan Minata. Insight's technical director is Mark Jones, and our engineer is Steven Starbuck. Joe Barr is Cap Radio Chief Content Officer. And I'm Vicky Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.